We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The season is now over. The Hornets closed it out, going 1-2 with a loss to Chris Paul and the Clippers, to Houston on the very last day of the week. And, of course, they beat Golden State with a beautiful 7-0 run to lock it up. And I was pretty sure middle of that game I was going to get some sort of news from McNamara's wife that he was lying in a bathtub dead. But, no, he's still here.
Only because of a 6-point fourth quarter.
That was a drastically bad fourth quarter, and I cannot say I felt bad about it one bit.
Well, okay, so we've kind of joked, but now we have the power of hindsight. So, yeah. So let me just tell you, I mean, on the surface, maybe this was a meaningless week for the Hornets, but it really wasn't. And let me just give you the numbers of how drastically different the future of this team would be if they had gone 3-0 versus 0-3. And I think we'll both agree 3-0 was a possibility. They were up by, what, 11 going into the fourth of the Clippers game. Mm-hmm. They had the Houston game locked up, if not for, you know.
There was absolutely a chance. I mean, they could have gone 3-0 very easily this week.
Okay, so 3-0, 4.5% chance at the first pick. 0-3, they would have had roughly an 18% chance at the first pick.
Uh-huh.
3-0, they have less than a 20% chance at a top three pick and less than a 20%. Both are around 15, 16 at a top three pick and a top six pick. And I'm going to use top six for this because I personally believe this is a six man draft and there's a drop off after there. Meanwhile, if they go 0-3, they have close to a 60% chance at the top three pick, and not basically, 100% chance at a top five, top six pick. So that's how drastically different it was. And the Hornets did go 1-2, which is, you know, better than it looked. If you would have told me they would have had an 11-point lead going into the fourth against the Clippers, Golden State fans were going to be cheering, "Let's go Hornets!" at Golden State, and you know they had a 17-point lead against Houston, I would have been really worried they would have went 2-1 and 3-0, which by the percentages I just read you would have been it would have been horrible for the future of this process. So I hated rooting for the losses, but absolutely had to in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, you drew it to our attention before that final game. I think, what was it? If we had won that game and everything went against us, we would have fallen from what, like tied for third for tied for with six or something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, it was going to have been a disaster if everything went against us. But, of course, somehow I don't know, Monty must have forgotten to substitute for Watkins and Dyson in that fourth quarter. Did he not notice they couldn't play basketball anymore? They were tired?
That's where you see him growing as a coach. Now he knows. I mean, in the Golden State game, they're up by, I believe it was 7, and uh-huh. with 3 minutes left, for some reason, he's putting Bellinelli in the game. There's two things to talk about here, but you saw Mark Jackson was not going and reaching for Klay Thompson, who just happened to be their best player, and he's also a young guy who could use this time. But Mark Jackson resisted the urge. Monty couldn't, and Bellinelli gets a 3 to pull him within 2, and the game-winning bucket, but Monty learned how to lose by the next night.
I got to be fair to him, though. Bellinelli is the difference in a game being a one or a loss, really?
And see, to me, that's the second part I was going to talk about. Is that's how far we've come in this season.
Really?
Bellinelli was a guy we're all yelling at and shouting in the first half of the year, and now he's so deadly that I'm afraid of him on our team helping us win as I was of Kobe in his prime going against us. I mean, you could go back and check the Twitter account. At the moment I saw Bellinelli get up and come in, it looked like the Hornets had that game racked up from a loss standpoint. I just tweeted, no! And that's how afraid I was that Bellinelli was going to ruin the tank. And unfortunately, I was right. I mean, the Houston game helps out a little bit. But still, like I said, I mean, there's losing that game would have increased our odds at Anthony Davis by about 4%, would have increased the odds at a top 3 pick by about 15%, and would have guaranteed us a top 6 pick. So still a game I wish we would have lost, but I guess I could take it. But yeah, let's just quickly go over this week. The Clippers game, I don't know about you, but what I'm going to remember most from that game is officially losing all respect for the Clippers on that Reggie Evans flop. And then as the camera pulled to Grievous Vasquez on the sideline, it caught him at the exact moment where he said, how do I say this nicely? Kitty butt, female parent trucker. That's the best I could do. I guess you could decode some of those words. Kitty butt, female parent trucker. And I just lost all respect for the Clippers in that game, but I got to give a fruit basket to Randy Foy. Randy Foy, who helps the Clippers go out a 33-14 run in the fourth quarter to win that game when it looked like the Hornets were going to pull it out.
Right. I mean, I'll admit, I was enjoying the hell out of that game. Just because I can't stand that team. God, the Clippers are so awful. I'm not over Paul. I saw like a couple people were saying stuff in the comments. But they're over Paul. You know, I still love Paul. I love watching him play. When he takes over, he's still just magnificent to watch. But there's so much else. I mean, Griffin is such a bitch.
You could have said female dog there.
Right? Sorry, but he is. I mean, he's the guy's just like, he's always mugging. He's always whining. He's, you know, way stronger than anybody else. He shoves them around, throws elbows, you know, does little cheap attack, like hits on everybody. And then if somebody touches him, he acts like, oh, you know, you just violated the Virgin Mary. It's like, give me a break. You play tough, you get hit back. That's how basketball plays. Don't whine about it.
So they're going into their first playoff game tonight in about half an hour. Obviously, that game will be over by the time this podcast is published. But just from watching that game, who do you think wins a playoff series? Last year's Hornets team or this year's Clippers team, if somehow they could play?
Is David West healthy?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah.
David West is healthy?
Let's go healthy David West.
Then the Hornets don't have any questions.
I don't care. To me, it's either way. But yeah, I mean, I was just in that's a two-man team on the offensive end. And even Griffin has his warts with his free throw shooting, not on that night, but on most. But DeAndre Jordan, I mean, that's a guy that they're going to be given $11-plus million to for the next 3 years. What a mistake that and seemingly the Caron Butler signing were.
Yeah, I mean, they keep talking. They kept saying, well, he could turn into the next Tyson Chandler and stuff. I mean, the guy has no defensive instincts at all. And people will keep saying, but he blocks all the shots. I mean, the guy is out of position every time they go up against him. He's completely oblivious to actual basketball. I mean, I don't even know what you do with that guy.
Yeah.
And he fouls people all the time, and somehow he thinks he's not fouling them. But, I mean, he, like, chops people in the head, and then he's like, oh, he gets this whiny look on his face and goes yells at the refs. It's like, really?
Yeah, yeah, I love that. That's my favorite attribute of almost every basketball player is when they foul somebody, they look like they didn't do anything. But, of course, if, you know, on the other end, they would want that same call. My takeaway from this game was that – one of Aminu's best three games, in your opinion, or at least, you know, different stretches of it?
Yeah. I think Aminu's been growing in the last month more than he has grown the entire rest of the season combined because of his regular extended minutes that were not ever going to be cut. He knew he was going to get those minutes. He knew that even if he made a stupid mistake, he was still getting 30 minutes so he could play through it. And I think those things really do wear on young players like him that, you know, he knew Trevor Ariza was right there. And Trevor Ariza, you know, does everything that he does defensively, maybe a little bit, you know, a little bit more offensively. So he knew right, you know, he made a mistake. Ariza was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I think having that, I think the, one of the best moves Monty or Dell, I'm not sure who actually made the decision, made this entire last couple months was, you know, Ariza, having that discussion with Ariza, you're sitting down, we're playing Aminu.
Yeah, and I think every Clipper fan wanted to hate on Jason Smith in this game, but as much as they probably hated him, I would imagine that they walked away respecting the guy's game. I mean, he puts up another solid game against the Clippers, seemed to bury every 18-footer he took. You know, took 9 shots, finished with 13 points, had 8 rebounds, 3 blocks, a couple of which were pretty impressive. But I just walked away from that game thinking that, you know, Smith, depending on who the guy is next to him, could be a fringe starter next year and at the very least one of the best backup bigs in the league.
Yeah, and we'll get to talk about Smith a little bit later in the show. But, I mean, I still just love Monty's entire quote about him, you know, because he thought he was there. We asked him about what he felt about the way Smith was treated after that foul, like in the media and on ESPN and everything. And Monty was saying how bad he felt for Smith, that he's being, you know, reviled for some sort of dirty player. And he was, because, you know, he wouldn't even crush a grape. Which is just Smith plays as hard as he can, but I cannot honestly think of him actually trying. I mean, I can't imagine a play that he actually was trying to hurt someone. Even that Griffin foul, which I'll admit, full speed, it's not a clean foul. It was pretty dangerous. But I still firmly convinced he wasn't even imagining he was going to hurt Blake Griffin on that foul.
All right, so breaking news. You heard it here first. Jason Smith will not be opening a vineyard in the offseason. the other thing, okay, so I want to get your opinion. We haven't been able to get Eric Gordon on the podcast yet. Hopefully we could. But if we asked him this question, what do you think the answer would be? Eric, when you take the ball to the hole, you're one of the toughest guys in the NBA to stop. Even your mid-range game is well above average, yet you take 4 to 5 threes a game and haven't been hitting the season. Why do you keep shooting them when there's other parts of your game that are far more efficient and effective?
What would he say?
Yeah. Well,
he'd say he's a shooter and he keeps shooting until, because that's what he's supposed to do.
Right. But you could shoot other shots. I mean, I'm not telling him to stop shooting. I'm just.
Yeah, but his historic. He would say, look at my stats last year. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I could shoot that. I don't even know what Aaron Gordon sounds like.
He can. No, that was probably a very accurate representation. No, he can't. I mean, like Chris Rock says, you could drive your car with your feet if you want to, but that don't make it a good blanking idea. I don't know. I just think he's been super efficient. He took the ball to the bucket, got 12 free throws in that game, and just goes 1 of 5 from three again. And it's just been a reoccurring theme in the, 8 or 9 games he played this season.
But, well, he shot 25% from three this year. Previous year, he shot 37%. Honestly, you know, certain players, in my opinion, I think he would be a little less effective if everybody thought he wasn't going to take the three. So I think he still needs to take a few of them. Would I say 5 is the optimal number? Probably not. Yeah. But I'll give him 5 threes every game if he's drawing 10 to 12 free throws every game. I don't care about those extra threes.
All right.
I mean, he's when we acquired him, I said then, you know, he is a guy who gives you nothing but efficient scoring. And honestly, that's probably the number one need for this Hornets team. So I'm perfectly fine with that.
See, and I guess my problem is there's so many, if you're taking the ball to the hole, there's so many positive things that could happen on a missed shot. Where if you miss a three, there's just negative thing. I mean, long rebounds lead to fast breaks. Where I think Derrick Rose, in my system in which we do assists in a completely different way, I think Derrick Rose would average 12 to 14 assists a game because he takes the ball to the hole, misses a shot, but it's contested by three guys, and Noah or Boozer gets an easy follow up layup. I just think so much more happens when you take the ball to the rim, even if you miss. If he just keeps firing 4 or 5 three-pointers a game and only hitting at a 25% clip, I think over time, that creates more fast-break opportunities for teams, and the Hornets are obviously best defensively when they could get set. So.
Yeah, and I mean, earlier in the year I pointed out that the Hornets are one of the worst teams. We're one of the worst teams in the league at defending off of the off of steals, fast breaks. However, I think I understand where your worries are coming from, but I think they're a little overblown. I mean, he shot 25% for the season. He shot 32% for, you know, the month of, or for April. The guy has shot 37 in the past. I'm perfectly fine with him continuing to take that shot, honestly. 37% isn't even amazing. I mean, I think the league average for 3-point shooters is right around there. So, you know, if he's average, it'll open up his game still, even for the drive, because you got to respect him and stay out on him.
All right, and you're probably the type of father that lets your kids have cookies before dinner, but that's just not what I'm doing. All right, so moving on to the game that honestly cost me a relatively sleepless night, the Hornets at the Warriors, Bellinelli goes 9 of 14, hits both of his threes, goes off for 23 points. And this is where I'm frustrated. He got 35 minutes in a game that didn't matter, that hopefully they would lose. Well, Xavier Henry only played 7, including none in the second half. If Monty just puts Henry in for that fourth quarter instead of Bellinelli, he could honestly say he's given minutes to a guy that he wants to see if he'll develop. And the Hornets walk out of there with the loss. I don't understand it, but that game up until May 30th, when the ping pong balls are drawn, I think it's gonna frustrate me a little bit every day.
Well, I'll say this about Xavier Henry. I don't think anything has proven to me more than that game and the last few games of the season than that Xavier Henry is not in the long-term plans of the Hornets organization.
He's not in the plans because he's not good enough, or just because of how you're saying that, because of how they used his minutes?
Well, a little of both. I mean, it's because the indicator is because of the way they've used his minutes. I mean, if they really wanted to see what Xavier Henry is capable of, if they're still trying to make that decision, you better believe that Marco Bellinelli was not getting 35 minutes a game. You better believe that Xavier Henry would have at least been getting 20 or 25 minutes a game over these last few weeks, and he hasn't been. He's been getting very little time, and what time he's been out there, he's been pretty terrible. So, I mean, I think it's like a double-edged thing. He's not getting the time. When he's out there, he's pressing. He's been playing pretty poorly. I think that was the end of Xavier Henry as a Hornet. I think you'll see him moved as some sort of package, unless they, you know, nobody wants him, or they, you know, he just doesn't fit into whatever move they make. I mean, he's got a contract next year. The Hornets picked up his option.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a chance that he'll be with the Hornets next year. I just don't see him as like a major piece that they see going forward. And just because of the minutes that he was getting.
Yeah.
I mean, Al-Farouq Aminu for a whole month has been averaging 32 minutes a game. And Xavier Henry is averaging 17.
Yeah. I mean, I was really surprised. I mean, he had some bonehead moments in the first half, and Monty just didn't play him at all in the second. But if anything, the bonehead moments would have encouraged me to play him more. Other two things I take away from that game is honestly, Jeremy Tyler is the worst player I've ever seen in the history of the NBA. I mean, I know people who didn't watch the game will look at his stat line and say 13-8. Come on, he's not that bad. I don't care. Worst player I've ever seen in the league. Good luck with him, Golden State. And Gustavo, I know it was against a team with basically with a hole in the center, donut team, whatever you want to call them, but probably Gustavo's best game in a while on both ends. I mean, he had some blocks that had the Golden State commentators, who, by the way, are probably the nicest commentators I've ever. I mean, they're just the most complimentary, happy, euphoric. But they had them probably walking away from that game thinking Gustavo Ayón is the next Serge Ibaka.
Right.
But impressive game from him.
But, and you know, it was definitely an impressive game for him, but you have to like combine what you just said before that with what Gustavo Ayón did. Almost all four of those blocks were him guarding Jeremy Tyler. So, I mean, you can't say he's going against the worst player in the history of basketball and then say, but his stat line was so amazing, he's awesome. So, he shut down Jeremy Tyler.
And let me give an example of how nice the Warriors announcers are. They, with a straight face, made the claim that one of the reasons, if not the reason, that the Warriors were not going to make the playoffs this year was the injury to Kwame Brown.
Right.
So it just makes you realize that, there are other delusional fan bases out there.
It could also be the fact that they've watched bad basketball for, 20 years now?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they think that Kwame Brown is a good player. Oh, I don't know. That was Klay Thompson looks good.
Yeah, he looks good. I mean, statistically, David Lee and Bogut are one of the top 3 to 5 power forward center combos in the NBA.
Yeah, and Steph Curry, if he can come back from all those ankle problems.
Yeah, and now they're
good team.
And here's where I think karma is going to come in. I honestly believe this. So Golden State, as of right now, looks like they're going to keep their pick. They're in the number 7 lottery position. If the pick is top 7 protected. So the only way they could lose their pick is if one of the teams from 8 to 14 jump them.
Right.
I think I saw there's a 28% chance of that happening. Now, just for beating us in this game, or losing to us, which is beating us in this game, I predict that the Minnesota pick that we have is going to land in the top 3, pushing Golden State's back to 8 and giving it to Utah and the Hornets eventually being rewarded for this win.
Is this Mike Stradamus talking?
Stradamus predicts, based on karma, not because of a vision I've had yet, but just based on karma for Warriors fans cheering, let's go Hornets, and for us beating them in one of the toughest games that I've ever had to watch, that will happen.
I don't know if I really believe in karma all that much.
No.
But it would be nice. I would love to see that 10. I mean, that slot 10 has like a 1% chance of moving up into each of the top three
positions. Yeah, so about a little less than a 5% chance overall, but...
Which brings us to our next segment.
Hold on, Houston game. Are you kidding me?
Oh, Houston game? You want to talk about Houston game that badly?
I want to do a breakdown of every fourth quarter possession. Can we do that? Can we talk? I mean...
I don't think I need to even look at the game log. Isn't it like turnover, 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 miss shot, miss shot, miss shot?
The Hornets put up 20 points in the first. They're just warming up. 22 in the second, 29 in the third. So you'd expect, I mean, at that pace, I'm not really good at those number sequences, but I think they're on pace for like a 37-point fourth quarter, whatever. Yeah. They come out with six, and if you just look at the play-by-play blog, yeah, you're right. You see turnover, Vasquez missed 20-footer.
Turnover?
Turnover. Aminu missed 23-footer, because that's the shot you want him taking. But I joke, but the first made shot is a 24-foot three from Al Farouk.
At the 6:47 mark. Yeah. Yeah, so almost half the quarter.
And that gives them the lead. And, they don't – you know, Houston still had trouble – pulling that game out, but I've got to give props, and it, just like I gave Randy Foy a fruit basket, Marcus Morris, one of the Morris brothers, gets one for the three-pointer that put them ahead with 1:17 left. That pretty much locked up about 60 extra lottery balls for the Hornets. So thank you, Marcus Morris.
But I mean, I thought the best part of that whole thing was they were posting up Lance Thomas. I mean, they were actually running plays for possibly the worst offensive talent I've ever seen in the NBA, even worse than Jeremy Tyler.
Nobody's worse than Jeremy Tyler.
Lance Thomas is pretty close if he's not dead even. Lance is an energy guy, but oh my, he frantically leaps into the air, spins around wildly, and like whips the ball at the backboard, hoping it will bank in. I mean, if he's not being set up 100% by somebody else, he is awful.
So you're saying you don't like Lance a lot?
That's so bad.
But and this is where I think Monty really grew as a coach. Marco Bellinelli plays 16 minutes. He's plus 16 in this game. Even more remarkable, Carl Landry plays 7, and he's plus 13.
I got to say, I was really – my stomach was actually hurting when I was watching them play in that first quarter or first half. But even I giggled a little bit when Carl Landry just comes in, and he's just messing around with – I mean, he was playing with them. He did one post up where he caught the ball in the mid post range, and he actually spun around 4 times with different up fakes, and then just stopped, squared up, and hit a jumper over the guy.
Yeah.
And then he walks down with his mouthpiece out, grinning. He was just having fun. Yeah. And after he hit the last one, I was like screaming at the television, "Get Landry off the court!" But they did.
And this, I mean, this wasn't. The Rockets had some injuries, but they still had 7 of their top 10 guys, 7 of their top 9. I mean, and the Hornets, Carl Landry, Jason Smith, and Bellinelli combined to play only 28 minutes. They were a combined plus 38.
Yep.
So, I mean, if the Hornets, if they would have played their regulars, who at this point their regulars are their backups, but whatever, they would have won that game with ease. Aminu with a double-double, nice way to end the season again. Getting 44 minutes, taking a couple more shots, burying 2 threes in the game. So something to look forward to heading into the offseason. But as you said, yeah, let's take a look at just the lotto chances. I want to throw out the numbers just for people who didn't want to hurt their brains this weekend reading Jason's amazing draft probabilities column. If you haven't read it yet, check it out. But just to kind of break it down for you, the Hornets, there was a coin flip between them and Cleveland. Essentially, the coin flip doesn't mean anything unless the Hornets and Cleveland, if neither of them land in the top three, then it matters and Cleveland just gets slotted ahead of the Hornets. Jason ran the numbers on that after I asked him to. Basically, there's a 71% chance the coin flip won't matter. Only 29% of the time will neither of those teams be in the top three. So more likely than not, that coin flip won't even matter, but the Cavs did win it. The Hornets have a 13.8% chance at number one in Anthony Davis. They have a 45% chance at a top three pick. So again, a coin flip, about 50-50 at getting one of those top three prospects.
And importantly, the top three, those are, you feel there's a clear top three, right? I know you said it's top six draft.
I think there's clear top three in talent, but I think that there's a couple guys that teams could reach for. Like, I think Thomas Robinson could go fifth. He's clearly one of the top three talents, but in the same way that, you know, Hashim Thabeet was reached for, and that pushed other guys down who were better talents, I think a team could reach for Drummond or could reach for Bradley Beal based purely on position. So while there's a top three talent, I still think that there's a chance, if the draft order goes the right way, that the Hornets could get Thomas Robinson at five. I mean, if Cleveland had to pick between Bradley Beal and Thomas Robinson, they're taking Bradley Beal based purely on need. So yeah, there's a top three in talent, but I don't think that necessarily those guys are going to go 1, 2, 3. But, so yeah, 45% chance at a top three pick, a 99% chance at a top six pick, which again, I say is important because I think that it falls down after six again. And then, an 85% chance at a top five pick. So those are ours. And then just a couple other numbers, just a little bit optimistic. The Minnesota pick, as we talked about, is a 1.1% chance at number one, about a 4% chance of finishing in the top three. And six out of the last seven lotto winners have had less balls than the Hornets are going to have on May 30th. So six out of the last seven winners had a smaller chance to win the lottery and did it. So take that for what it's worth. And the only time the Hornets have won the lotto, they only had a 10.6% chance, so a smaller chance than they do now. So maybe those numbers will make you feel a little bit optimistic, but that's kind of where we stand. What are your thoughts on our chances and probabilities, and how are you going to feel if the numbers say that the most likely picks are the Hornets are going to have number five and number 10.
Well, honestly, the way I've been trying to train my mind to think is we're getting the fifth and 10th pick.
Uh-huh.
I honestly don't even try to think about getting anybody higher than fifth. So I'm staring full into the blazing sun of terror of picking Andre Drummond fifth. And
there's going to be a team in the, if that happens, there'll be a team in the top four that are going to reach for the one guy who could be, I mean, if teams are going to reach for Hashim Thabeet, they're going to reach for Drummond, who has far more upside.
Wow. All I know is I'm absolutely terrified of that. I mean, I know you've made peace with the idea of maybe getting Andre Drummond, and of course, David Thorpe at ESPN was talking about how Andre Drummond would be a great first pick for us because he could learn behind Okafor and be there in a couple of years when we need him to be. But, Drummond scares me more than Perry Jones does.
Yeah, I just, like I said, if the Hornets finish fifth, there's going to be a team that takes Drummond in the top four, guys like that, who could possibly be a center. He's going to work out magnificently. He's going to, all of his measurables at the pre-draft camps are going to be off the charts. I mean, remember, this is a guy who was, he was the favorite to be number one going into this year ahead of Anthony Davis.
Right.
So teams will talk themselves back in. I think our floor is Harrison Barnes. I'm doing more research into Harrison Barnes because I think he's more realistically going to be the guy if the Hornets fall, but what are your thoughts on, I mean, obviously number one pick is a no brainer, but if the Hornets do fall, if they are able to get the number two pick, what are your thoughts with, you know, Kid Gilchrist, Thomas Robinson, or, you know, possibly trading the pick?
If we get the number two pick?
Yeah.
I'd explore finding a all-star like Rajon Rondo with it. If that doesn't work out, I'd take Robinson.
Okay, so more based on need, or do you think he's, regardless of need, the better player?
So I like Kid Gilchrist a lot, but I don't think he is as much of an upgrade at the small forward over Aminu and Ariza that Robinson would be over essentially our starting power forward position right now, which is nobody.
So I'm guessing you don't agree with my latest draft column where I basically say, don't even look at your roster, draft the best player as opposed to current need.
No, I don't necessarily agree with it. I have always found, it's been at least my opinion, that when teams draft and they completely ignore need, like, let's say, Minnesota Timberwolves, Derek Williams. Do you think that this year has helped his progression as a basketball player at all?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you look at his splits between the first half and second, yeah, definitely.
I mean, it was
between him and Enes Kanter, and yeah, I still make that choice 100 out of 100 times.
I would have preferred to have seen them move him for somebody that would actually help them.
Okay, but that's something different. That's not drafting still, then. So, yeah, I mean, they had an offer of Danny Granger on the table.
Well, actually, let me put it this way. I actually 100% agree with the idea that Chad Ford at ESPN completely, you know, talks about every time the draft comes around, which is teams put them into tiers.
Right.
And I 100% agree that you put your guys into tiers, and that way you're always picking an unbelievable talent, even if they're filling a spot on your team that's already filled. But in my opinion, the difference between Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and I think he's a better basketball player than Thomas Robinson, but I don't think he's like more than like 5% better than Thomas Robinson.
Okay.
So if Thomas Robinson's going to help this team, and Kidd-Gilchrist will be fighting with two other people at his position who are all right or could turn out to be pretty decent, take Thomas Robinson.
Yeah, and I don't even think your argument is – I think the stronger part of your argument is – Robinson's going to get more opportunity to develop.
Mm-hmm. He will turn into something. He'll have a chance.
Where Kid go? Yeah. Yeah. No, I actually think, I mean, if it was just tiers, I would actually put Gilchrist on a higher tier. You know, I think he's a significantly better prospect than Robinson, but I think he's a horrible fit for what Monty does. I mean, if you look at his strengths, his number one strength offensively is scoring in transition, something that he's not going to get any opportunities to do here. So,
right.
But yeah, again, something that we'll talk more about as we get closer to the draft. I just thought, you know, I thought it was interesting to, you know, to know the Hornets' chances, to know some of those numbers from the past. And, you know, again, they are very likely to have two top 10 picks in this draft, and the future is relatively bright.
Yep, and we'll know May 30th, right? That's the date.
May 30th, going to be a big day, and then if they do get the number one pick, the Unibrow shirts hit the press the next day.
Yep,
and you will be able to order them only on Hornets247.com.
That's right, because no one else will have a Unibrow t-shirt.
all right, and okay, before we talk about the future a little more and kind of recap the season, just a real small thing that I wanted to talk about. The Derrick Rose goes down with a horrible injury. It seems like we've had we're just tricking ourselves into thinking we've had more than usual in this shortened season, but he's gone, and that makes four out of the 20 guys who were listed for the Olympic, you know, the 20 finalists, they're out with injury. A fifth, Lamar Odom, has basically all got himself cut from the team. We're looking at 15 guys, 12 of which will make the team. One of them possibly being Eric Gordon, I guess I wanted to do kind of a point counterpoint. You could pick whatever side you want, but Eric Gordon as a member of Team USA, good or bad?
I'm going to go with bad. And I mean, there's a lot to be said for being part of that team and talking about unity and development and what happened last time. But Eric Gordon is going to be the Tayshaun Prince of the Olympics from last year, last time. He's going to be on the bench. He's not going to take minutes from Chris Paul. He's not taking them from Deron Williams. He's not taking them from Dwayne Wade. I mean, he is not going to be playing. So he's just going to be the end of the bench cheerleader. And so basically we're going to be putting him into the Olympics where he has to have all these practices with really incredible athletes and possibly get injured again, which is, you know, the number one concern with Eric Gordon. And, you know, we'll lose him again for some portion of the year because he went and decided to be an Olympian. And honestly, I just want him to take the summer off, take a couple months off, let that knee get 100%. Don't even mess with this kind of stuff. Just get healthy and then, you know, come back next year strong and play a nice big season for us.
Yeah, see, I'm kind of on the side of, well, I guess I have to be since point and counterpoint, but kind of on the side of it.
See, you're already backing down. My argument was so incredible. You have no response.
Well, see, I actually find one of the points, you know, agreeable, but I think it goes with my side. So you're saying that Gordon is going to be on the bench. He's not going to be playing much. Well, to me, that right there reduces, you know, any if all chance of injury. So I'm taking the, you know, the injury concern pretty much off the table. I mean, very rarely do guys suffer serious injuries in practices. So I'm kind of removing that off the table. And what I'm getting is the chance for Gordon to be around some of the best winners in basketball. I mean, this is a guy who, I'm correct in saying he's never been in a playoff game, right?
Yep.
You know, he's never been anywhere near a winning team. I would guess, I haven't looked, but I guess his career winning percentage is probably around 30%. He's going to be around with some of the hardest workers, some of the biggest winners, biggest names, and kind of, you know, see and learn from them. I know Chris Paul came back from his first Olympic experience with, you know, with a whole new vigor, talked about how he always thought he was a hard worker, but after seeing some of those guys, he really, you know, understood and knew what it took to be a champion, blah, blah, blah. So I think just him getting that experience and the fact that, yeah, you're right, he's not going to really get any playing time, and that minimizing the risk for injury. I would love to see it. I mean, I saw how it kind of sparked Tyson Chandler and revitalized his career. And I really think it would be a good opportunity for Gordon to go out there, basically practice against some of the best players in the league without really risking getting hurt against Argentina or Spain.
You're wrong. I declare myself the winner.
All right, yeah, but I think Eric Gordon's going to agree with me, even if he's a fan.
Yeah, I think he will too.
I
don't think Eric Gordon gives a crap what I think.
And that's the end of part one of the podcast. Part two of the podcast, Michael and I role play. Michael gets to be Del Demps. I get to be Monty Williams. We get to talk about this team and what we want to do going forward. I, of course, would have preferred to role play as a wizard or a paladin, and he role play as an orc that I got to squash, but for some reason, Michael didn't want to do that. Thanks for listening.
From self-help books to meditation, we work hard to find peace of mind. Xfinity Home helps you rest easy with a total home security solution installed by experts and powered by secure and reliable Xfinity Wi-Fi. You'll get 24/7 professional monitoring with fast response times and real-time alerts, like when doors and windows are opened. Rest easier with Xfinity Home. Learn more at Xfinity.com/home security. Restrictions apply. Residential customers only. Requires compatible high-speed internet. Professional installation required.